Pierre McGuire, brought to you by Dagwood Salada Dag. All the freshly sliced ingredients of any Dagwood sandwich wrapped in crispy lettuce. It's a breadless sandwich, and it's really tasty.
How you doing, Pierre?
Good, Mitch. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. What's your 4th of July in Connecticut like at the McGuire home?
Very early for radio shows for me, and then down to the golf course to play in the father-son tournament at our golf course, where my son and I finished second, missed by one shot of winning, so a little disappointed there, but that's what it consists of, and then a little outdoor barbecue after I'm done with you.
Which shot did you blow, Pierre?
You know what? Probably two or three on the greens. For those that are golfers, our greens are running between 12.5 and 13 on the stimp meter, and the pins were basically in very difficult positions, so my putting was wayward. I hurt my son's performance today.
Wow. And we got this on tape forever.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm not. Hey, I told him in the car. He was great. And I just said to him, you played fantastic. I'm really sorry.
What was at stake? Just bragging rights? Just bragging rights.
Yeah, well, you win.
I got it.
You
no
win.
Matter what, huh?
You win. So we didn't. We finished second.
And you are getting ready to head to Rio, right, at some
I
point?
I am. I'm leaving for Rio at the end of the month. Before then, I've got some hockey work to do. Rye's got a bunch of stuff for USA Hockey and regional camps and stuff like that. And so, yeah, all kinds of good stuff.
Pierre, I'm curious because this will be the last time, unless there's some blockbuster event, we'll catch up to you. And if there's somebody of note that the Canadians end up signing or trading for, we'll certainly reach out and see if you're available. But in the aftermath of the Subban Weber trade, there seems to be more and more people pointing fingers at PK about what supposedly went down and how bad of a teammate he was and all of that. And Marc Bergeron refuses to. Or when he was asked about it, said, you know, we're moving on. He's in Nashville now. We're not taking any more questions about PK. There's something sour about this, in my opinion, about how he's being portrayed in the aftermath of a trade that does involve at least one and maybe two future Hall of Famers.
You know, it's interesting. I'm glad you said it the way you did, Mitch, because we're in the same ballpark here. You know what this reminds me of is that you learn a long time when you're in the National Hockey League. When you trade somebody, make it a positive thing for the person leaving and a real positive thing for the person coming. Don't beat down somebody else, and don't beat down the guy you're getting. You know, stand up for him. If the media's going to go after the guy you're getting, stand up for him. I think you saw that with Peter Chiarelli getting Adam Larson. He praised Taylor Hall, but he also pumped up Adam Larson, even though there was huge issues in their marketplace. I'm not sure that's happened in Montreal, and that's okay, because as Marc Bergeron says, they're going to move on. But I think there are a lot of people spinning right now. I do. I think there are a lot of storytellers out there that aren't really being accurate, and there are a lot of people telling stories that really don't know what happened inside that dressing room. Because I've talked to players in that team that had no issues with PK Subban at all, none, zero. I've also talked to players in that team that thought he took up too much oxygen in the room. That didn't mean they didn't like him, but that he took up some oxygen in the room. That happens from all, just so fans know, there are a lot of teams in the league where that happens. It's not just Montreal. But this reminds me a bit of what happened when Ronnie Francis got traded out of Hartford to Pittsburgh, and he got beaten down to a pulp. Ronnie Francis went on to win two Stanley Cups.
Ron Francis was beaten up? Who would be beating up a guy like Ron Francis?
Oh, my gosh. Go look at some of the stories in the Hartford Current back in 1991. Can't lead, overrated player, not a good guy, selfish, all this stuff.
Ron Francis?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, he got beaten to a pulp. And, you know, anyways, this is kind of what this reminds me of. But it's Montreal, for the fans, you're getting a very good player. And I've said this right from the start, Shea Weber's a very good player. He doesn't do what P.K. Subban does.
Not even close.
It's two totally different. Doesn't mean that Shea's a bad player. He's a good player, and he's a good leader, and he's a great guy. I said this from the start. P.K. Subban's a great player, but they're different players. They are completely different players.
The Canadiens' development camp got underway on Sunday, continues all week. Francis Bouillon is in as a guest instructor. He's played, as you know, with Nashville, with Shea Weber, and Radulov, for that matter, and, of course, more recently with PK Subban. A couple of clips here from Francis Bouillon, courtesy of Joey Alfieri, who's covering the development camp for us here at TSN 690.
Obviously, I wasn't here for the two last years, so but I played 2 years with PK, and I really enjoyed the player, the man, and I mean, he was always polite with everybody. He was a true gentleman in my my book, so I never had any problem with him. So I really respect PK.
And
I mean, PK, it's I'm always saying it's like your little brother, you know, at home. Sometimes you like him, sometimes you just. He's all around you when you not feel good. So it's he's got a different character, but at the end of the day, that's your brother, and you want to have PK in your team.
Francis Bouillon.
You know what? The Canadiens should hire that guy.
Well, they kind of, it sounds like...
Frankie Bouillon is an awesome human being. You talk about a guy that appreciated every single moment he's in the National Hockey League, and he earned every single paycheck he ever got. True gentleman, awesome teammate, great person, a guy that you could win with. Did whatever it took to win and support his teammates. What he said, the first clip, Mitch, is what I've heard more of than the negative ones that you've been obviously hearing.
And when he uses the term, it kind of reminds us of what Hal Gill has described PK as, you know, and Hal Gill, he had that big brother mentor figure with him in the person of Hal Gill. There were guys, there's no question, and we talked about it. While PK's career was emerging in the NHL, there are veteran guys who have a professional way about them who kind of roll their eyes and look at him as like he's this act, and he rubbed them the wrong way. But that doesn't mean it couldn't be rectified.
It starts with the leadership up above, and you have to understand dealing with millennial athletes. It's a completely different mindset. It's a foreign concept to most people that run NHL teams right now because it's not the way the NHL has been made over time, but you find a way to incorporate these people. You made some stellar points late last week about Doug Harvey, about Jacques Plante, about Guy Lafleur, about Pete Mahovlich, about different people that had different characteristics that always seemingly fit in with the Montreal Canadiens organization. They were different. They weren't like the rest of the guys.
PK Subban, never, as far as I know, never got behind the wheel and fell asleep after drinking too much on the highway. PK Subban, I don't believe, was ever involved with underage women. PK Subban, I don't believe, ever fired a gun off in his pants. Like, what is the worst thing that he's been accused of here?
This is why I'm standing up for him. And again, I know I shared it with you last week. I had a long talk with him right after the deal, right after the trade. And you know what? He's prepared to move on. He was moving on. He's really excited about the opportunity in Nashville. He loves Montreal. He loves the fact that he was part of the Montreal Canadiens. He'll always revere that. So he's moving on.
Rod wasn't here, so I think Rod may want to come after you a little bit in one way or another.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be rough, McGuire.
I'm ready.
What some people categorize as the flamboyance, what some people categorize as the individual plays here and there, to get from there to him being a potentially destructive force, I mean, that's a hell of a leap in logic. And I was thinking about this when we heard Mark Bergevin go through his investigation into Alex Radulov, right? Speaking to people in his background, interviewing him directly. There must have been something, and I don't know, maybe they tried a lot, and maybe they didn't, I don't know, but there must have been something that they could have done to bridge that divide between the flamboyance and to some people interpreting PK's antics as being destructive. There's got to be a way to bridge that. There must have been a way.
That's why I'm saying what I'm saying. We're on the same page. It's dealing with the millennial athlete. It's finding a way to incorporate him into your system, into your organization, to get him to understand where he sits on the food chain, how important he is, and just different ways that he can still be himself but interact in a different way internally with his teammates. If, and I stress if, some of them were bothered by his behavior, because some that I've spoken with have had no issues at all. None. Zero. You know, it's interesting you talk about that. Mitch and I remember a player growing up for the Montreal Alouettes by the name of Johnny Rogers.
Ordinary superstar.
His self-proclaimed ordinary superstar on national TV after one of his games playing with the Alouettes.
Ran into the end zone backwards.
Correct. I don't think people had a problem with Johnny Rogers.
They got the punt return rule changed. Marv Levy got the punt return return rule in this CFL change. There was no blocking on punt returns until they had Johnny Rogers here.
And it worked out pretty well.
So let me ask you about some hockey questions now.
Yeah.
When it comes to the Montreal Canadiens. And I mentioned this before, and somebody else updated my answer. I thought the last 18-year-old to break camp with the Canadiens as a defenseman was Peter Svoboda, mm-hmm. the year he was drafted. Actually, Matthew Schneider was 18, and he played a couple years after that.
Cornwall Royals. Yeah.
Do you think there's any chance, and the fact that it is Shea Weber, and they're still, obviously, if they don't find an experienced left-handed defenseman who can move the puck, is it possible that Sergachev can make this team? Paired with Weber?
I do. I think it's possible. You also have to know that they're not very deep. We talked about the importance of adding depth to their defense. Tom Gilbert has moved on to Los Angeles, so that depletes their depth a little bit more. I think there's every chance that Sergachev can play in the NHL. Now, he has to be spotted in, but I think there's every chance. You know, Ottawa's got a player by the name of Shabbat, who was a first-round pick a year ago. He and Colin White were their two first-round picks. Colin White's going to go back to Boston College. Shabbat is probably going to have a real legitimate chance to make Ottawa. And there's a lot of similarities in terms of how they play. So I could see how Sergachev could be part of the National Hockey League roster for sure.
Before we move up front, they made a couple of depth moves over the weekend, and one of them was your pal Ulfi Samuelsson's son, Philip Samuelsson. What kind of defenseman is he?
Stay at home, not really fancy, not a hard rock like his father. Played at Boston College, drafted by Pittsburgh, watched him play his first NHL game for the Penguins. It was actually against his father's New York Ranger team. The father was the assistant coach, and Philip was playing. Phillip's just a puck mover. He's nothing fancy, meat and potatoes defenseman, but he's not anything like his father. He's got another brother, Henrik, who was a first-round pick of Arizona, and he's got another brother, Adam, who's already committed to Boston College, a 6'4" defenseman. Of the three Samuelsson boys, Adam is probably the best. But I think he's only 16 going on 17, but he's a tremendous player. I watched him practice a lot here in Connecticut when the family lived here. So Phillip's a good player, but he's more of a depth player in an organization.
As you look at the possible forward combinations in the aftermath of the signing of Radulov, it's clear there are some holes, and there's like fingers crossed on younger players, but we know that they made a very significant offer to try to get Milan Lucic. And so they would have Pacioretty and Lucic on the left side. So it's clear to me that they're searching for another left winger of some note. In terms of free agent, there isn't a whole lot there. I mean, there's Radim Verbata.
Because? He's an outside. He's a peripheral player. If he was as good as everybody thinks, he would be going back to Arizona or he'd be staying in Vancouver. He's always moved around, and one of the reasons why is because coaches become frustrated with his lack of intensity. But is he a virtuoso with the puck? Yeah, he's really good with the puck.
And he's 35.
Yeah, he's not getting any younger.
And I know you've talked about perhaps they're shifting their identity.
They are.
Smash mouth than speed and mm-hmm. skill. So, but does that not lead you to believe that they are in search of a bona fide NHL left winger? Still?
Yeah, I mean, I think they are. I think they're probably in search of a lot of different things up front because, again, the cupboard's not overly stocked just because of the way it's played out. And they've made some moves. They've traded some draft picks. Some players haven't panned out. Whatever you want to look at it, it just hasn't worked out. But I will tell you, and I firmly believe this, they're not good enough down the middle. If you look at what Boston did, a non-playoff team, just like the Canadiens last year, the Bruins of the last 2 years, with Krejci, Bergeron, and now David Backes, just take the Canadiens lineup and match it up down the middle. Just take it.
But there's no doubt. But there is also some talk, and that's all it is at this point, that they may end up moving Krejci to get Shattenkirk or something.
They might. They might do that because that's an organizational need of theirs. But then if they do that, Bergeron moves up. Ryan Spooner probably plays in the two-hole because they have that insurance policy. Spooner's a very, very talented player who's got a chance to be an elite point-getter in the NHL. And then Backes still stays in the three-hole. They've got guys. I mean, they've got tremendous depth coming up from Providence. I've told you a million times, and I'll tell you again, Philadelphia and Boston are the two deepest prospect pool teams right now in the National Hockey League in the Eastern Conference, with Buffalo being a close third.
What do you know? David Desharnais obviously is a bit of a roadblock here with 1 year left on a contract that Pierre said was too long by about a year. But let's assume they could work something out and bring in a centerman. Again, on the free agent front, there is Sam Gagner.
Yep.
And there is Brandon Peary. What is Brandon Peary's story? Why has he moved around?
Brandon Peary is he's a young kid from Toronto who went to RPI, Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute. Was a first-round pick of Chicago when Dale Talon was there. And then there was a big there was a trade made between Chicago and Florida, and Brandon Peary ended up down in Florida. And then Brandon Peary was moved to Anaheim to clear the decks for Vincent Trocheck, so Florida could go 1-2-3 down the middle with Barkov, Bukestad, and then Trocheck in the three-hole. Trocheck just got a huge deal there, I think a 5-year deal at over $4.5 million a year. He's a tremendous player. He really is. So Brandon Peary's kind of been a victim of circumstance. Was really close to being part of the 2011 World Junior team that lost in Buffalo. He was one of the last players cut. He and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins were two of the last players cut there. But very, very talented player, not overly hard, and he's been more of a victim or circumstance. In terms of Sammy Gagner, part of the problem for him has always been being rushed into the NHL as an 18-year-old on a bad team in Edmonton. Said it at the time, we'll say it again, that was really wrong what they did to that kid. Then they started moving him over to the wing. And so he's always kind of been helter-skelter. Sammy Gagner, when he was coming out of junior with the London Knights, just off the charts good.
So is Brandon Peary a player that Canadians should be interested in?
Oh, I think so. I think with Sammy, too, I mean, if you're really looking to upgrade down the middle, those are two players that you could probably get at a very reasonable rate so that they're not cap unfriendly. And would be helpful to you. But Brandon Peary is a much better player, and people will look at it, well, he's moved here. He's been a victim of circumstance. Sometimes that happens to players.
Well, really Anaheim knew that they weren't bringing him back. It was try to win the cup.
Right. They were bringing them in there for organizational depth, absolutely.
Okay, and on the wing, and only because he was kind of linked to the Canadiens briefly, and Marc Bergevin has a bit of a history with the two of them in Chicago at the same time. Remember, we were at the draft. There was this false report that Chris Versteeg had been traded to the Canadiens. He's a free agent. Is he a guy that they should look at?
I don't see why not. Again, they need depth at the forward position. He'll come in and be cap-friendly. He's gotten much more mature over time. He obviously brings Stanley Cup hardware, which helps a lot. In terms of recognition from your teammates and the way he plays, he can produce points, but again, he's not getting any younger, and he's a smaller body.
So you just mentioned the Panthers. They are, man, are they loaded. Locked and loaded, right?
They can be viewed two ways. One, they've done some brilliant things, and it's going to pay off. Or two, they've been really over-aggressive and have made some very major evaluation mistakes internally. Nobody knows for sure, including them, by the way. They think it's, you know, a great plan because they put it into play. We'll see. We'll see about their depth on defense. We're going to see about their depth on the wings. And we're going to find out just how good they are in terms of the cap going forward because they've done some very, very aggressive things.
So you would be concerned. I'm guessing you would be concerned about, you know, how healthy Roberto Luongo is going to be.
That's number one.
And whether James
Reimer. Reimer's contract is way overinflated.
And the dealing of Eric Gudbranson.
Terrible deal. Here's how a fan needs to look at that. If the Florida Panthers were that gung-ho on trading away Eric Gudbranson, Adam Larson brought back Taylor Hall. Eric Gudbranson, who was a third overall pick, Larson was a fourth overall pick, brought back Jared McCann. I asked the question, if you're really doing your homework, how did you not make the deal with Edmonton?
Okay, so who else? Is there anything else
that
you want?
Does it make sense to you?
No. I think those of us who have seen Gudbranson were kind of surprised. But there's that tug of war going on, right, in the front office?
Well, the tug of war is over. Tommy Rowe and his allies have won.
Right. Dale Tallon would not have traded Eric Goodbranson.
I don't believe he would have, no.
Rod, this is, you've missed the last couple of weeks. They've been kind of busy, so if you want to play catch-up a little bit before we send Pierre on his way onto the barbecue pit.
I know you haven't loved the number of no moves and no trades handed out, Pierre, over the last 5 years or so.
They've dissipated, haven't they? That's
exactly where I'm going. And I'm wondering if maybe managers and agents have kind of come up with a dollar amount per year that's kind of equivalent to a no move in their minds, where they're willing to give more money without having to give up a no move or a no trade.
Oh, I like the way you phrase that, but the way they've done it is through signing bonus. Signing bonuses are so massive and so front loaded right now. So that's been the one thing that's done that they've done. And it's, again, I believe the Players Association and the agents themselves are much better equipped to do negotiations than teams are. Just because teams are so secretive, whereas agents and the Players Association are always sharing numbers and information and different negotiation tactics so they can gang up on the teams, and they've done it masterfully. So they deserve a ton of credit. The one thing they've done, that to Rod's point, is they've done a great job in terms of saying, okay, you don't want to give us no trades and no moves? Good, you're going to give us signing bonuses, which can't get bought out, and players are going to be made whole right from the start of the contract.
And you know what that means, right? Yeah, you know what that means down the road. No, that means we're heading for another lockout.
Yeah, but
to get rid of this issue.
Down the road. Don't put that in people's heads.
Well, Bob McKenzie did it before I did. He did.
I know, but this Bobby, I heard Bobby talking about that when I was in the studio. Friday.
Yeah, it's easy because he's gone for the summer. He's on his lake now, right? He's just drinking wine and belching on his lake and tweeting out views of his lake, his own personal lake that he has.
You know what? I couldn't
he earned
be happy
it.
For him. He earned every single lakefront acreage that he owns.
Yeah, but it's when Gary Lawless tweets out his lake. That's when I'm like, what did I miss here, man? What the heck did I miss?
Oh.
Yeah, maybe I should have grown up in Tromla.
You would have fit in.
Yeah, well, I would have found a way to blow it.
No, you wouldn't.
Yeah. All right. So that's it, Pierre. Thanks.
I'm coming to Montreal in about 10 days. I'll track you down.
Please do.
Mitch Garber and his people have a camp going. I don't know if you know. He's kind of in the agent's business now.
I've spoke to him very briefly about this. I did ask him when I heard about it, and yeah.
So I believe I got to check it out with Mitch and some of the folks affiliated with his agency, but I think I'm coming in to speak to their prospects about dealing with the media.
Hmm.
So I will get in touch with you.
Yes, please do. Be nice to have a cold one with you.
Yeah.
Or a couple.
Yeah.
Have a great summer, Pierre. Thanks as always. Until we see you again. Thank you.
Are we doing anything from Rio?
If you're not bitten by a killer mosquito, I'd love to.
That don't pay attention to that. Yeah, no, I would. Didn't we do stuff from London? I thought we did.
Did we?
Yeah, I thought we did stuff from London.
I don't remember.
Hockey guy doing Summer Olympics.
This is London.
It's the water polo. McGuire's an expert.
We're doing water polo, and then one of the this was a good story for the fans out there. One of the memorable moments I had at the London Olympics was getting to sit down with Kobe Bryant and Kevin Durant. It was Sam Flood's idea. I want a hockey guy doing a basketball interview in a sit-down situation before the gold medal game. And Kevin Durant just blew me away, just how kind he was. But this was a better one. Kobe Bryant, when Pronger was playing for Anaheim, Pronger and Bryant became really good friends. So before the interview started, he goes, "My buddy Pronger's really mad at you." And I was like, oh, no. That's how it started. It was really good. And then he said, I'm just kidding.
So Kevin Durant, is can you imagine like the 78 Montreal Canadiens adding
For Golden State, this is
Phil Esposito or somebody like that.
No, well said. You know, one of the best lines in that interview I'll always remember, I asked him, I said, "Where did your good guy gene come from?" He goes, "From my auntie and my mom." He says, "If not for them, I'd be dead." That's what he said right in the interview. It was an amazing, amazing statement from a guy that's just, what an awesome guy he is. He's just fantastic.
In his sleep, 27 to 30 points every night in his sleep.
Yeah, he's pretty good.
Pierre, please get in touch when you're here, and we'll set things up for real.
I'll get in touch before I get there. Mitch, before I go, it's been another amazing year. I cannot thank you enough for everything, and you guys, Rod in particular, but Jay Farrar when Rod wasn't there, and Amanda and Connor and Mitch Gallo. Just your whole team has been so delightful to deal with, and believe me, it's for the listeners out there, it's not always easy to track me down, but they always find a way, and I appreciate the professionalism unbelievably, Mitch. Thank you very much for another great year to all you and your teammates bring. Thanks.
Thank you, Pierre. We love you.
Take care.
Have a great summer.
Bye-bye.